The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 12th of October, 2020. On the podcast today, Harold Braun, Executive Chairman of Guidant, which is a portfolio company of Tech Capital, TEK is ticker there, and Harold explains the business and discusses current progress and future potential. Also on the podcast, Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about the American elections and potential impact on the markets. Also, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Eddie Stobart Logistics, Tuple, and Power Metal Resources. And as always, at the end of the podcast, I'll be highlighting two lists. That's the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, top 10 versions of these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll all see lots of other content and our COVID-19 index. Let's see what the big riser is today. It's Synergin up 15%, close to 16%. Then it's Cromec Group up 10%, and Gfinity up 10% as well. Biggest fallers today are Tiziana Life Sciences, Fusion Antibodies, and N4 Pharma, which is down 8% to 6.3 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Harold Braun, Executive Chairman of Guidant, a portfolio company of Tech Capital. TEK is a ticker there. Harold, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, now there's been quite a bit of news out on Guidant of late. And so before we get into some of the news, can you just give us a brief summary as to what Guidant's all about, please, Harold?
Yes. Guidant develops and has exclusive rights, actually, for software solutions for the global autonomous vehicle market. And in that, we're utilizing also artificial intelligence algorithm to improve the safety and adoption of autonomous vehicles. That's the essence what we do.
Excellent stuff. Okay, now listen, there's a massive, you know, expectation and excitement about the rise in autonomous vehicles. Some people are looking forward to it, other people not. I personally can't wait to sit in my car and do what I want to do, let the car do the work. But how well, you know, is the company prepared for this massive rise in demand here?
Yes, so autonomous vehicles are, of course, they're all sorts of vehicles. So there is, a vehicle is a car, a vehicle is a robot, a vehicle can be also a drone, whether this is a land-based drone, so a terrestrial drone, or, a flying drone. So there are all sorts of autonomous vehicles. We're focusing at the moment on land-based drones and also on vehicles like a car. Right. And all of these autonomous vehicles, they have a huge market and in different use cases. One of the use cases I guess we're talking about is also, delivery of goods. Mm. On the other side, there are also the cars. You see them all coming up now in different areas in the world and in different countries. And this is a huge market potential. And I can see I'm living in the U.S., I see in different states now really a big uptick on electro vehicle, EVs, which is the base for AVs. And I expect in the next 2 to 5 years, 2-3 years, I think you will see these AVs on the streets. You see them today already, and you see also delivery drones. But in the next 3 to 5 years, I think there will be a significant uptick in the market. Mm-hmm. And it is a multi-billion dollar market. So when you see the market size, it's in around $600 billion on just these vehicles I just talked about.
Yeah. Now, last month you signed a strategic alliance with Best Mile. Can you explain that and the synergies it can create, please, Harold?
Yes. Best Mile is a company which is based in Switzerland, and they focus on the European market right now, but they have also projects in the US. And the rationale behind this strategic partnership is about that Best Mile focus, and they had already customers in the orchestration and monitoring market for autonomous vehicles. They have a couple of projects in Europe. What they were looking for was actually what we bring to the table, and this is the tailor operation. So I explain tailor operation for an AV in a second. And this kind of combination, having orchestration, monitoring, and control, tailor operation control of a vehicle, of course, is very, very important. That means tailor operation, we know where the car is, we know where it's driving, we know the environment with AI, with other artificial intelligence algorithm, we know more about the environment, and we can take over control of that vehicle. That means if the vehicle gets into somehow mishap situations, we can, first of all, we know where the vehicle is, and we can take over control in this situation, get the vehicle out of mishaps and out of these situations, and yield back control. So this tailor operation and control, that's what Best Mile was looking for, and we were looking for software applications they have. So in principle, orchestration and monitoring on Best Mile with tail operation on our side, that combined gives us, I would almost say, an unfair advantage in the industry.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned, of course, AVs, autonomous vehicles, you know, cover drones and drone delivery. That's growing. We see that a lot more happening and people experimenting with that. Can you explain your involvement in the sector, please, Harold, a bit more?
Yes, in the beginning, we actually thought that we focus with our business model on cars, on autonomous vehicles equal to a car, an autonomous car. And then we saw more and more as a first use case coming up like mushrooms in the US in different states, that the delivery of goods is very important, and the companies are really, really coming off the ground here and delivering goods. So we said, okay, fine. There is, in the US, for example, there is a law that when you operate an autonomous vehicle on public roads, there is a law and the legislation that this vehicle has to have some kind of human intervention possibility. And that can, of course, be with a driver, with a safety driver in the AV, or with a tail operation center, which we call RMCC, right, which we are developing. Well, in a land-based drone, the little drone or robots, how you want to call them, there's no space for a safety driver. So therefore, you have to tail operate them. And so we focused more on that area right now as the first use case, because it's there. So it's not science fiction, it is just reality. And when you see today in different cities that companies like DoorDash or others, Postmates or whatever, deliver goods with drones, land-based drones, well, that is really good for us. And of course, in these difficult times right now with the pandemic, with COVID-19, of course, that got another uptick. Yeah, so we call that zero-touch delivery. A lot of people are looking for zero-touch deliveries. And so that's a very good and useful case for us to tailor operate this kind of vehicle. So we have a big involvement in this use case in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And can you please provide your thoughts about some upcoming core technologies you are developing at the moment?
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, so the number one focus right now for the company is to develop and operate very soon in the first quarter of 2021, the first remote monitoring and control center here in the US, Florida, where also the law, which I just explained, is a massive, of course, positive for us, that we have to have control over a vehicle. That's the first one. And after this, we are, of course, building software applications on top of that. You can imagine security is a security layer in an AV environment. It's very, very important. But there is equally important, and we have not seen that in the industry, is the our software or artificial intelligence algorithm. So more or less a learning system, correct? Mm-hmm. Because a car or an autonomous vehicle reacts in different contents, in different environments differently. And therefore, we need to use all the data which we can get in an area where AVs are operating and work that in algorithms so that we can prevent and also predict mishaps before they happen. So the next big thing is that we are having a sophisticated artificial intelligence software, you know, with our which we can apply to the remote monitoring and control center. This is big. So everybody's talking about AI, and but you have to make it, you know, applicable to certain use cases, and that's what's the next big thing is which is coming up.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And can you give us a bit of guidance on news flow that investors can expect over the next few months and important milestones you're hoping to achieve, Harold?
Yes. So one thing what we're working on and will hopefully also announce soon is an AV, an autonomous vehicle, cannot operate without a mobile network. It has to be connected, with other words. So it is in principle a computer on wheels. It has to be connected. It is a mobile device. So we can think about these cars or these vehicles as mobile devices. What is important is that these devices are connected very, very safe, very, very secured, and very, very reliable with really low latency, because latency computes into distance. That means when I have not the signal for doing a right or left turn in the right moment, and the latency is long, as there's a long time between it, that translate into distance, translate into yards or meters, right? So milliseconds translate into yards or meters. Mm-hmm. So that means we're coming up with very, let's say, sophisticated algorithms together with partners and with software developers in that area to lower the latency and provide very, very reliable, secure and safe and low latency connectivity concepts. That is definitely a big thing. We are actually testing it right now, and there could be a news flow on that. And of course, all the time we're looking for new partnerships which can enhance us. A big deal is, and we need to all understand that it is a complex situation to get AVs on the streets and operate safely on the streets. Therefore, it can only be done in an ecosystem, and we are working with ecosystem partners together to make that as fast and as safe as possible.
Excellent stuff. Well, Harold, it's good to hear from you, and like you say, lots going on, so hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
Yeah, good health, thank you, Justin. Hope you and your family are too.
Yeah, very good. Now, good. Do you know what?
Yeah, you sound very chipper.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, do you know what? Some of my stock's doing well of late, so it's quite good.
That
so,
always puts a spring in your step,
yeah, exactly. I love that. So, anyway, but talking about, you know, this, it can all be upset, though. Yeah, there'd be a bit of volatility coming towards the end of this month, because we talked about Americans and election stuff, and I saw that people are saying, and I didn't get this, they said apparently Asian markets were at almost a 2.5-year high, mm-hmm. because there was stimulus being talked about, even though the jobs data in America wasn't very good. And then the second paragraph was, and also, that Biden's leading in the polls. Now, I thought that was quite a bad thing for the elections or for the markets.
Yeah, this is tricky, isn't it? I mean, I think, first of all, Asia is interesting. It's actually been outperforming quite solidly for some time. And it may just be that it was, they won't say, first into COVID and first out, within reason. I mean, that's one possibility. Secondly, I mean, again, it's hard to judge, and we won't know how everybody's handled this situation till the history books are written in a good few years' time. But Asia was prepared in that it had been through SARS in 2002-03, it had been through bird flu and swine flu, and so you could argue that, you know, they were prepared, dealt with it quickly, got their test track and trace systems up and running pretty smoothly, and that's why they came out of it very quickly with much less economic damage and loss of life than we've seen in other countries, dare one say. So I think that may be another contributory factor to why Asia's outperforming, and overall their healthcare systems are extremely well funded and pretty efficient, with certain countries as an exception. So that's another possible reason. But yeah, the stimulus thing, I mean, hope, as we know, is not an investment strategy, certainly not one that's going to last you very long or prove to be very robust or sustainable. But every time I read a market comments thing at the moment, it's markets rose or fell because hopes for a stimulus package in America were, you know, insert dashed or, you know, encouraged by. So, and I guess Asia, emerging markets generally, probably seen a little bit loosely as commodity price proxy. Certain key countries are very exposed to commodities, or ones like India, for example, are huge net importers, and so is China. So they wouldn't want to see commodity prices going up. But generally speaking, if you look at the MSCI Emerging Markets Equity Index overall and run it against the UBS Bloomberg Commodity Price Index, it's not bad.
Yeah.
The dollar's weakened a little bit, which is generally seen as good for emerging markets because they tend to borrow a lot in overseas currencies, dollars, and if the dollar goes up, it makes it harder to service their debt. So again, if you run the MSCI Emerging Markets Index against DXY, the DXY Dollar Trade Weighted Index, there's a pretty good inverse correlation there. So if the dollar goes down, emerging markets go up and vice versa. So that may be helping, because the dollar's just lost a little bit of steam recently. And also, emerging markets are global trade proxies. So I guess the theory might be, if Trump gets the push and Biden, I don't think Biden can back down on the argument with China, because I think that would play very badly with the electorate. But I think if he seemed to take a more, you know, a less combative stance, shall we say, and indeed there's a package which boosts global growth, in emerging markets are potentially right in the box seat there. And they have actually underperformed for quite a long time relative to developed markets. So you can construct a case for them, as I've just done, actually without too much trouble, intriguingly, though I didn't know that they were at that multi-period high.
Yeah. So, and what's the odd is that we just talked about before we came on, Trump, who his strength is pretty much debating, even though they say he was interrupted 70 times on the last debate. But what you get, though, is that, I don't know of anyone who've watched, I didn't watch the entire thing, I don't know who did.
I've got far better things to do on my time.
Exactly, most people watch highlights. So yep, what you get is, what you get is, you can't show 70 interruptions because it wouldn't be even good highlights, it wouldn't make good TV. So what this show is the point. And to me, okay, Biden made a couple of good points, but Trump is stronger in that arena, it seems. Now he's saying he's not going to do this virtual thing, which is a bit odd, isn't it, really?
I find that strange. I mean, whatever you think of his tactics in the first debate, I think I can understand why he did it, because he will want to portray himself as the guy who's on top of the situation, who's got all of his mental faculties, and he will want to try and portray Biden as the older guy who's maybe, you know, not quite as on top of his brief. And I think I can understand why he did it. It didn't look good, but I can understand why he did it, and I'm surprised, therefore, he doesn't want to go back and do it again, because he's trailing in the polls, and I think if you duck these things, generally the person that ducks them, you know, gets the worst end of it in terms of the perception of that. And yeah, I think his biggest chance is to portray Biden as somebody who is past it, and not necessarily, you know, the right person for the next 4 years for the world's largest economy and world's largest democracy. So I am surprised, but then, really, it more fooled me for being surprised at anything that the current president of the United States chooses to do, because it's very hard to predict. And I think when it comes to the US election, I'm getting lots and lots of questions on what do you think the US election is going to do, the US stock market is going to do on the day of the election? To which my first answer is, well, you tell me where the S&P 500 is going to be on the 3rd of November, and then I can give you a view.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because it might have moved a lot by the 3rd of November. And if it's, you know, and also let's face it, 4 years ago, Trump was not seen as likely the winner, and he was.
Yeah.
And he was then seen as a bad thing for the market, and the market went down for not very long, then roofed it for the next 4 years, more or less.
Yeah.
So again, I think from an investment point of view, you know, taking a dogmatic, strong view on the basis of what you think is going to happen in the US election is probably not a brilliant idea, all things being equal.
Yeah, and I remember that because it was almost, first of all, a shock that Trump won.
Yeah.
And then the stock market sold off because of that shock. And then they thought, hang on a sec, he's a businessman. He's pro-business, pretty much. You can't tell how good a business he is, but he's not scared of debt. He's not scared of stimulus. He's not scared of any of that stuff. So it's probably going to be good for the market. And he'll probably, if anything, lower taxes. So then it rallied.
Which he did. And I think the thing is with Biden, you've got push and pull here in that he does, in theory, on paper, have a huge tax increase plan coming round the corner. About $4 trillion US, I think, and a lot of wealth taxes and a lot of the redistribution of wealth, which, whatever you think of it from a social perspective, from a Wall Street perspective, probably isn't brilliant for share prices. Yeah. At the same time, he does have some very aggressive spending plans lined up, a lot of it on renewable energy, so that's going to be potentially a very hot area. So there will be horses for courses, potentially. And also, a lot of it will depend, you know, this remarkable American system of checks and balances. You may have a Democrat in the White House, you may have a Democrat-controlled House of Representatives, the lower level of Congress, but what happens in the Senate can be very important. So if the Democrats sweep all three, they have a lot more scope for getting things done than if the Republicans are still in control of the Senate with Mitch McConnell sat there. And his colleagues, obviously, at the moment, are generally quite keen to gain, say whatever the other side says, and that just seems to be the way modern politics goes. But if you get a blue sweep of Democrats controlling all three, there is more chance, I would suspect, of some more aggressive policies coming through. And if they get a supermajority in the Senate of 60, then that really may embolden what you would argue is the more left-wing side of the Democrats, which I suppose you could say possibly Kamala Harris came from, but also people like Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, who are aggressively pushing for things like big crackdowns on shale. So watch the oil price, ladies and gentlemen. And also this Congress report this week that was looking at big tech with a very jaundiced eye, saying that they're too powerful, they almost have monopolies, we don't like the fact they're able to buy up the competition. And it kind of was reading a little bit like a breakup might be considered by talking about them, you know, being siloed and really only being allowed to dominate in one area. So you could see certain areas that come under pressure: tech, oil and gas, healthcare, logically. Trump as well, because the Democrats want to extend the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and that will drive down drug prices. But equally, Trump has said he wants to get aggressive on drug prices, and blow me down, in the last week, 2 weeks, US healthcare stocks have been incredibly strong because they've underperformed all the time that Biden's lead has gone up in the polls. And again, people may be taking their view by the time we actually get there. Mm. It's in the price, and who knows what, you know, as we know, saying to get one thing to get yourself elected is different from doing it when you get in, possibly because, again, your room to get something done is limited if you don't have full control of all three suites of office, as it were. So I wouldn't want to be too dogmatic. I think I share your view that volatility is likely. And if we do, heaven forbid, get a contested election result, which the current incumbent said you might do, or you don't get an instant result, then all we can do is look back to 2000, when, if you remember, Gore and Bush were arguing over the hanging chads in Florida, and votes had to be recounted. And I think the margin of victory for George W. Bush in Florida was 0.009% of the votes or something. And that dragged on for a month, during which time the S&P 500 went down by 12%. Now, there were other things going on. The tech bubble was busily leaking air, so it wasn't just politics. But that certainly didn't help, and it did create short-term volatility. And I think that is probably a fair premise upon which to work. And if I was running a hedge fund, which everybody in the world would be delighted to know that I'm not, I suspect I would not be looking to run risk on right now, just because you just don't know what's going to be coming on the 3rd of November. You get a contested result, things could get pretty shaky. It'd be nice to have a little bit of cash knocking about, because if there is a wobble, that's probably when I would be inclined to have a look, because I think whoever gets in is going to be spending money and stimulating. And in that respect, there's going to be deficits going up. I think the Fed's probably only a stock market stumble away from more QE, regardless of what it says. And under those circumstances, that's probably going to be interesting for asset prices. Now, there are other theories that maybe you won't get the same type of QEs in the past, and that the Fed will either just mail digital checks to people or will just directly put money into infrastructure projects, not relying on the banks to be the transmission mechanism, but just do it directly.
Yeah.
And that could be seen as potentially more inflationary, and again, that might give some degree of interest in equities and bonds and cash, forget it. But that may also lean people towards, you know, real stuff, commodities, they won't say precious metals, anything that's got index linked, really, which might be infrastructure stocks, where a lot of the contracts have got inflation links in there. So there are lots of different possible end games. My suspicion is near-term volatility, yes. And then whoever gets in, money thrown around like confetti.
Yeah. Do you want to hear my conspiracy theory that I've been thinking of recently?
Okay, tell me.
Now, it's part, people know part of it, but for a long time, Trump has been trying to get positive results on a vaccine before, you know, Americans go to the polls. And now he's been pushing the FDA, he's been pressurizing, he's been pressuring, apparently, he's been calling individual companies like Pfizer, J&J, all these companies, Moderna, you know, to push along, to move it along, phase three. And of course they can't, because they have to go through certain checks.
Rules.
Yeah, phase three, the FDA clearance. And he's been saying now, apparently Pfizer, someone said they're quite Republican, they're going to get some top-line results on their phase three trials out before November the 3rd. And then Trump says, soon works. But apparently they've come under a lot of pressure, and the CEOs had to come out and say, we're not under political pressure here. We will release results when we're ready. When they're ready to go to the FDA, we'll and so because of that, Trump has decided to do his own trial, I think, his phase three trial. He's decided to get COVID, and he said, right, I'm going to take the drugs. And that's what he's done. Did you see the two videos he's done in the last 2 days? Really ramping these drugs he's been taking. And in fact, he said, I've taken Regeneron. Regeneron's a company. It's not a drug.
No,
it's like they produce drugs. I've taken Regeneron. I feel better than I did 20 years ago. And you keep saying this. I'm thinking Trump is saying, we've got a cure here for COVID. I've taken it. I'm a clinically obese guy. Above 70.
With a bad diet.
He's in two of the high-risk categories. He's above 70, and he's clinically obese. And he's proving to the public there's a cure for COVID. Don't worry about it. And so I think he's doing his own phase three trial. What I think he's doing to try and get people on his side. So, listen, I didn't... He's never going to admit he acted slowly and he didn't take it seriously. No. He's never going to say that. No. But now he's trying to go the other end by saying, I'll give this drug to you all free of charge. It worked for me. It'll work for you. Don't be scared of COVID. It's not a big deal. Let's get on with it. And I think that's what he's doing. You know, he can't... lacking
any, I've got friends who think the same way. Some argue they didn't have it at all, and it was all just a bit of a stunt to show that he's super fit and Joe Biden's a lot older and not. And, you know, you'll never... I'm actually a history student by training, and I always... My only problem with conspiracy theories is you're relying on people to keep their mouths shut.
And
human beings, as a general rule... aren't terribly good at that.
I just think Trump's come up with himself saying, listen, I'm going to get COVID, and I take the drugs, and I say, it's worked for me, it's perfect. I don't need FDA clearance. Because he's taken this antibody therapy stuff that is being trialled.
Is that remdesivir or whatever it is?
He's been on Regeneron's drugs and remdesivir, but he's taken the drugs that they are trialling, and he's living proof, he'll say, that it works. We don't need FDA clearance. It works. Let's get on with it.
Because the Americans are still holding up the AstraZeneca-Oxford trial, aren't they, I think?
Yes,
I think
still,
it's going ahead in the UK again.
Yeah.
But after that, poor lady, I think, had nervous system trouble, didn't she, in her spinal cord, I think, and that didn't sound very nice at all. So I think the Americans are a little bit more wary of that one at the moment, I believe. But I can't pretend to be a pharmacologist or an epidemiologist, because as I've just confessed, I am a history student.
I think what we can be guaranteed of, I think, like I said, is a bit of volatility, isn't it? And that would be,
I think. And so if you are of a particularly nervous disposition, anything that you've got where you've overreached your normal risk appetite, or you've just had a bit of a flyer, you know, they might be the things you just need to double check on going into November 3 if the markets do have a wobble, because they're the things that will probably cause you the most anguish. But equally, again, second guessing the results, trading out, trading in, fiendishly difficult, potentially expensive, lots of commissions and fees, spreads, potentially taxes, and you've got two decisions to get right, not one. So I think I would be wary of going overboard on heavy trading going into the result, because as we said 4 years ago, I already thought that Trump would be bad news for markets, and the consensus was wrong. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. And I'd say if you are of a nervous disposition, then don't invest in the stock market.
Well, that's the other thing. Only invest with money that you can afford to lose. Make sure you've got 3-6 months savings socked away if you possibly can, and then you're hopefully going to have you're not going to have many sleepless nights, if any, anyway.
Marvellous stuff. Russ, thanks for that, and we'll speak to you next week.
I look forward to it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Greengills, CEO of Brand Communications. Alan, are you a bit green behind the gills there? A bit of a party on the weekend?
Yes, yeah, well, not at all green. Actually, my beloved daughter was married, and it was a very highly emotionally charged weekend for all, and a lovely ceremony down in Chichester, and then back to Lewes for a celebration with the family, which was great. And yeah, it was just I'll tell you what was really uplifting. We had a couple of cars. We decorated our cars with all the usual gubbins for weddings. So we drove back, and as we drove down the bypass, people are driving past, waving and tooting their horns and so on. And it was just generally very uplifting, because I think. I think this year, with all the crap, I was going to say, all the shit that's gone on, it's been an absolutely awful year. And I think I've not seen one wedding car on the road this year. So it was just, I think, lovely. You know, people were seeing it. And then, of course, when we got to the venue, people were just walking down the street and clapping and cheering and everything. It was great. Lovely, uplifting day. Yeah. And, yeah, as you can imagine, quite a bit to drink.
Yeah. Well, no, it is that. It's a bit of a grind, isn't it? And with more news about to come out now about these lockdowns, there is. You need something to look forward to, you know? And with a lot of people, obviously, they can't go on holidays because everywhere is on the quarantine list. So, yeah, it is. I just genuinely think we can't wait for some kind of positive news on the vaccines, because I think that'll give everyone a lift, you know, and the markets especially, that the ones that have been hammered, the stocks have been hammered. Because I just feel, I mean, as I said a while back, I said, the government can't tell businesses to just shut down, that's it, and not offer them anything. You know, they've got to, if you are telling them they can't operate, then you have to give them some financial help. Because otherwise, if I was a business, I'd say, no, if you're not going to help me, I can't shut down my business. How am I going to feed myself? Yeah. I mean, the people I employ, you know, what are they going to do? I heard some stories there, actually, on Radio 5 Live and some taxis, and some really depressing stories about these guys going out for like 12-hour shifts and earning 50 quid, if that. You know, and they've got families of three and four at home with kids, three or four kids, and one of this London cabbie was saying, you know, I'm not the only one. All the lads, you know, he said, are depressed, and they joke about, you know, sort of, you see someone jumping off a bridge, it's probably me, you know, but we are. He said, I've been to the doctor about it, and he said it's depressing, and you spend all the time in a cab on your own. You know, pretty much. So you've got loads of time to think about stuff. So, especially when you're not busy, it's the worst time of all. So, yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of people are coming to the end of the tether, I think. And so we need to get some positivity out there. And hopefully, like I said, I know Trump is putting his foot, but he's calling up the CEOs, apparently, of these drug companies. And a lot of political pressure now to get them to not conform with him, because he's putting pressure on them to say they get some results up before November the 3rd. But I think at least I think Pfizer may be coming up with good line top line results on phase 3 trials. And let's be honest, Trump has conducted his own phase 3 trial. He's undergone COVID. He's taken the drugs on trial.
And he's really believe that? I don't.
I'm feeling great. No, I think. Do you know what? I believe he has taken all those drugs. I believe he wants to. They've said to him basically, we're not going to run to your timetable. We're running to our timetable and the FDA's timetable. And so he decided to take it upon himself to say, well, give me the drugs and I'll see if they're any good. He said, I'm obese, I'm 74, I'm in a high-risk category, and I'm okay. It's good. So he's trying to push the agenda a bit, isn't he, I think?
Well, he is, yeah. I mean, I suppose he has become progressively more orange over the past few months, so that could well be a side effect. But at the end of it, I think the whole thing was just one giant publicity stunt, because he was losing the debates hand over fist, because the guy is he's almost illogical in some of the stuff he says, and he's not a politician in the conventional sense of the word at all, and I think he's just lost serious points. So he's tried to endear himself to the U.S. electorate by with a stunt, and well, who knows? It may well work for him, but goodness.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see what happens. But we need positive. It's nice to see you had a good weekend there, and I think there's cars beeping you around, almost sharing in a bit of positive news. You know, if someone getting married, you know, I think that's a.
It was just such a lovely thing, you know. I I'm not going to get all emotional about it, but obviously your daughter gets married. It's a massive emotional wrench anyway. But just to see the impact it had, you know, on people driving across Sussex, and when we got to Lewes, everyone, you know, just people walking past, walking their dogs, clapping and cheering. It was just a lovely thing. And yeah, people. I'd like to think that we gave a few people a lift on Saturday. It was we certainly had a huge lift from it. So yeah, great.
Well, when I said lift this, I mean, you actually, you know, get on the car. This is just so appropriate. There's a wedding going on. But anyway, cool. Come on, let's get stocks in. Let's finally get some stocks. What's happening?
Okay, stocks. So, Eddie Stobart this morning, and just you and I have debated the merits of or not of Eddie Stobart for some months, possibly going back to last year, actually. But we all know what's happened to Eddie Stobart. Of course, was about to merge with Wincanton. Big problem on the in regard to debt. They had to call in. Well, they got a company called DBay Advisors in, who injected 70 million quid at approximately 32 pence, and of course, there were huge impairment charges. Since then, there's been a huge restructuring. The share price obviously plummeted. The company currently has a market valuation of 32 million, and that's down from a valuation getting on for $1 billion late last year. Now, the results today, I think have, you know, really sort of drawn a line in the sand for this, and indeed the chairman William Stobart has said the same thing. So what they've done during the year, they have restructured the business. They brought in a guy called Adrian Collins, who's a finance veteran, worked for Lion Trust and Gartmore, and a number of other PLC companies. And they've made some hard decisions, and they've shed some loss-making contracts. And of course, during the year, the logistics business that has been used to they're the primary supplier or primary logistics supplier to Tesco's. They've also won contracts this year with Morrisons, with McBride, the food manufacturer, Hillebrand, Nike, and Amazon, to name but a few. They've gone through the year. Revenues have been more or less the same. Now, I just need to explain a bit about the PLC company, because at the time of the injection last year, the company's basically was divided. The entity that owns Eddie Stobart owns half the company, and the PLC entity, which is almost a cash shell effectively, owns the other half. So whatever Eddie Stobart PLC shareholders had before, shareholders in the company, was halved, and that's from £1 billion company. Now we're now at 32 million, and the results were announced today. There was a trading update today. Revenues are 416 million, which is down 1.1%. Underlying EBITDA up 363% to 16.6 million. So the company's returned to profitability. And the chairman said today there are further benefits to come from, because they've shed loss-making contracts. The positive operating cash flow has initiated a pay down of the debt, which is currently 242 million. So they are now paying down debt from cash. And they're also, as agreed, set to repay the loan note or restructure the loan note that was put in place in December 2019. Now, all of the group, not just Eddie Stobart, the logistics company, but iForce, Pallet Network, and logistics people, which are part of the group, all reported growth in sales. So just on the basis that DBay Advisors injected 70 million at around 32 pence last year, we are still sitting on a share price that's 8.5p. It's up, by the way, this morning. It's up 30% this morning because the shares had drifted down. So we're now on the road to recovering. We're now profitable. The company's now profitable, and it's en route to paying down the debt mountain, and further cost savings are to come. So I think now Eddie Stobart offers a far more attractive investment proposition than it did when we spoke, and it was a speculative investment earlier on this year. I think it now offers something pretty solid, and given that we're still in lockdown, given that we are more reliant than ever on online deliveries, I think the logistics business looks very well placed, particularly as they've got the cost structure around operating that business in the right place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the issue with you know, this is the debt. It's always been the debt. You know? And I said, you know, you have people on Twitter, you know, ramping the stocks, and this used to be worth $1 billion. They've got revenue of 400 million. And they're only worth 30 million. And so whenever the company's like that, I know straight away, even without looking at it, they've got debt. There's no company would be valued, you know, if they were profitable, revenue of 400 million at 32 million pounds. And so you've got to look at the debt. And my issue was that, you know, they can't pay off the debt, they start sinking. And we've had similar arguments on other companies that have gone through since, like Thomas Cook. But now, you know, this company seems to be generating positive cash. They could, like I said, they can chip away at that debt, which is good. That's a positive thing, I think. I mean, I'm still not interested in the company because they've still got a lot of debt. And I mean, like I said, there's lots of companies out there with no debt. And so why not go for those? So, because that's less of a risk in my eyes. But net debt at the 31st of May 2020 of $242.7 million compared with $236 million. So that's still gone up a little bit, but hopefully that'll come back down. But yeah, listen, it's a viable investment again, of course, but it's got debt. And like I said, I think we're still going to have a rocky road here. You know, the economy for a while, so you never know what happens. Like I said, do you know what? That's it. To me, debt is another risk. You know, stocks and shares is about risk and reward. Simple as that. And you can break it down to that.
Absolutely.
And
yep,
so what you're
going
to look at is reduce the risk as much as possible, but try and keep the reward up there. But it's like it's like a bit of a gauge, really. Sometimes the more you reduce the risk, the less reward, because it's a safer stock. So you have to take on a bit of risk to get that upside reward. But sometimes there's a disconnect between the risk and the reward. You can find companies that you can see relatively low risk because they've got sort of, you know, cash and all that stuff, and the potential is quite high, but yet you know, people haven't priced that in. But here, like I said, there is risk there. There's the risk of debt. That's the trouble. That's the problem I got. And you can find other opportunities out there without that kind of debt. That's an issue I have with it. But like I said, that seems very positive update there. And so it seems to be going in the right direction as opposed to the wrong direction, you know?
Yeah, I think so. And you're right, Jess. I mean, yeah, there are, you could argue there are many more attractive investment opportunities out there than Eddie Stobel. But I think what's always attracted me is, in the same way as Thomas Cook, which worked first time around back in 2013-14 when Harriet Green came in, but not the second time, obviously, because, you know, it was... you know, in a terminal tailspin, as it were. But Stobart's, I think, it's been restructured. The business and the outlook for the business is very good indeed. And they've shed loss-making contracts. So they've got this finance veteran, Adrian Collins, at the helm now as chairman. And I think, still a work in progress. But I think the signs are very encouraging. And it could well sort of accumulate some decent gains from here.
Okay.
So there you go.
Oh, what's next, Sal?
Okay, we have also spoken about this before. Tuple. TOOP is the Epic code, and Tuple have also had a fairly sort of checkered year, shall we say. But nonetheless, when we spoke about this last year, obviously the CEO Andy Hollingsworth was pointing to profitability in, I think, the first part of 2020. Now, obviously, COVID probably largely scuppered that, but I think they've announced some interesting progress since the summer, and you know, as an investment proposition now, is probably worth revisiting. Shares are currently, well, the company's currently worth just under 6 million, 5.8 million market cap. Shares trading at 0.165 pence, been as low as 0.04p on the year, as high as 0.25. There are four brands within the group, which is the Tuple brand, the DMSL, which was the brand, which is the acquisition the company made, Broadband and Phones, and also Check That Company. So those are the four trading names within the group. And they are resellers of BT products and broadband products to businesses and corporations across the UK. So losses in July, when they announced results, losses have widened to a million from 843,000, but revenues have grown 39% to 1.5 million. Broadband have grown 70%. The mobile business has doubled. The profit margins have grown 61% to 334,000. So, yeah, Andy's delivered. The company is now in profit. Also, cash of 1 million in the bank following the fundraising. And at that point, they said there were synergies, or they saw synergies of over a million following the acquisition and integration of DMSL. In September, the company obviously had done some more work on DMSL and said that as a result of the examination of bringing the two together, they now foresaw cost synergies and savings of 1.6 million. And obviously that was that sort of propelled the price a little higher still, because the shares obviously had come off a low at 0.04 during the summer months. So have progressed nicely. Andy Hollingsworth also said at that point that The company is excellently placed for rapid expansion. And of course, today we hear the company has announced two new contract wins with investment management and advisory business in London and a property management and sales company in the east of England. These are, I think you and I were talking before, and there was a concern about the margins. But looking at the profit margins they delivered, if they carry on with these cost synergies and you've got a further 600,000 of synergies and cost savings on top of what was announced in July, then I think, you know, we've got, Tupel really could deliver some decent gains by the end of the financial year.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, Andy seems to be working hard. You know, he's to be fair to the guy, he comes on the podcast and, you know, he knows the margins need to improve, and that's what he's doing, I think. So, hopefully he'll do well. And like I said, it's a small cap. To be fair, it's done well over the last few sessions, isn't it? It's starting to get. I mean, like I said, I think I did a video on these. Maybe 2 years back, a year and a half back, something like that, saying, are they turning the corner? And it's taken a longer time to turn the corner than I thought. But
I think that's when we spoke about it. Actually, that was when we first spoke about it. It was certainly over a year ago. But I think also, you know, you can say, well, you know, Andy was probably on course, but COVID sort of put pay to it. So you know, and here we are now. The company has made their progress, and they look well placed. You know, despite the threat of COVID ongoing, they look well placed to continue to deliver further gains. So yeah, well done, Andy Hollingworth.
Marvellous. What's next, Al?
Okay, finally, I want to talk about Power Metal Resources. Obviously, the company run by Paul Johnson, and chairman is Andrew Bell. Now, I've spoken about these at length here and there recently, so I'm just going to do a very quick sort of summary. If you go to the Power Metal Resources website, there is a dashboard of all the projects the company has. This is a mining and exploration company with projects. There's a joint venture in Australia in the Victoria region, and an awful lot of articles have been published recently on the potential for gold in the Victoria region in southern Australia. And of course, there are Power Metal Resources and also ECR Minerals are working in that area and have key projects they're developing. So Red Rock Australasia is the joint venture set up between Red Rock Resources and Power Metal. Something like 11 to 12 license applications underway there, and there are developments near the Ballarat gold mine and in the property around there. And they recently appointed a guy called David Holden, who had retired in 2017, but came back to work on Lion Gold's Ballarat mine in 2018. He's a former technical advisor to the New Zealand government as well, and David Holden has come back in to manage and run the project for Power Metal. So that's a big development, you know, as a key player there. So the company also has a projects in Botswana, the Malopa Farms project. It's a drilling. They last week announced a drilling contract with drilling discovery drilling contractors, drilling 2.5 million square meters. 2,500 square meters across four diamond drill holes. Paul Johnson said of this, the actual scale of the Malopa Farms project, it's not just a large-scale metal discovery, it's a district-scale opportunity. So the project is also adjacent to the Sandfire Resources T3 deposit, which has been drilled and assessed already. So it's a known region for producing nickel and for producing other elements. So there'll be the drilling has started there, so we're going to get some news on that very soon. Also, projects in Tanzania, it's got the Haneti nickel lithium project, which is it owns 35% interest in, with Katoro Gold KAT owning the other half of the. Or 65% of the Haneti nickel project that is also progressing. Alamo Gold Project in the USA, there's an earning 50% earning potential. Power Metal has to basically inject cash and undertake exploration there. And then we have the Canada Silver Project, which is it's on the old Eureka Victoria Silver Mine in British Columbia, which was the first Crown granted mineral property in that area, and again a rights to earn an interest earning in that region is ongoing. They also have an interest, going back to Botswana again, the Kalahari Copper Belt joint venture with Kavanga Resources. Power Metal is owned 50%, and again, soil sampling drilling is underway there. Power Metal's share price has done extraordinarily well so far this year. However, it was driven higher last week. Paul Johnson bought a further £35,000 of shares with his own money. He's been injecting his own funds all through the year. So this is a CEO that is putting his money where his mouth is. And I think if you take a look at the website, take a look at the dashboard, the spread of risk offered by the company is very attractive indeed. And it's still trading on a modest valuation even now. One result from any of these projects could significantly change the valuation of the company.
What kind of result, though? Because it's exploration, isn't it?
<It's>
So years of fundraising are needed here.
Fundraising that they already have a lot of cash in the bank, but clearly with the Australian joint venture, for instance, the potential in Victoria, the existing gold mines operating in the region are well known, and there's a very good map on the Power Metals website that actually shows the territory and regions owned by the joint venture. Any of these are drilled. ECR last year, of course, drilled on the Creswick and the Bayliston licenses. The further drilling is being undertaken by ECR in Bayliston at this moment. And of course, some great grades were pulled out of the ground last year. Power Metal has yet to progress that, but that will be taking place in the next 6 months, and we shall know more. But any finds in that area are going to drive the price higher, of course, but the Malopa Farms project, I think, is the key focus for the moment, because nickel is obviously a key element, a key raw material for use in a number of industrial and commercial applications, if the size of the project, following the AeroMag surveys and following the data that's pulled out of the ground from drilling, reveals, as Paul says, what could be a district scale opportunity, then what valuation do you place on that? I don't know, but it'll be significant.
God, fair play, Paul's up to his tricks there. I was looking down the list of I was trying to find how much cash they had there when they last raised money, and I was scrolling down the news here on Vox, and I scrolled past loads of news, and I realised I was only in October. What the heck? How much news they release? I remember we did this with Metal Tiger once, Paul, and he used to come on the podcast, and I say, you're doing a lot of stuff, Paul, and you considering this, you know, the market cap is about 3 million or something. It was nothing. Said, yeah, and they were literally releasing news every week, and it got to the stage where they released news, it seemed like every day, and all of a sudden the share price took off. But same here, I'm scrolling down, it's like news every other day.
It's incredible. I mean, Power Metal, but
no, I mean, that's Paul's ploy. I mean, he doesn't have to release it. That's, I mean, most companies wouldn't release this much news. Paul does that, and I've said to people, you know, I've said to many people on the podcast, companies that have come on with Vox. I said, listen, if you want to get interest in your share, you talk about your company a lot. That's all you need to do. Don't just release news, you know, once every 6 months and hope people will pick up on it. They won't. There's 2,000 listed companies out there. If you want people to get, you know, start to researching your company and liking what they find, then you've got to start talking about the company a lot. And that's why Paul released lots of news. He knows that's part of the deal. He lots of news, people keep interested. And also, if you don't release lots of news, even existing shareholders may get bored and just sell and just move on. But literally, 9th of October, 8th of October, 7th of October, 5th of October, 1st of October, 30th of September. News on every one of the days. It's like every other day.
I know. But the thing is, with the range of projects, obviously we had all the share buys at the end of last week. You know, the pool share purchases were, you know, the TR ones were sort of coming thick and fast. But it's the developments, because there are so many projects owned by the group. There are developments literally every week, and well, several times a week, in fact, as we've seen. But as you rightly say, I mean, here we are. Power Metals currently got a market cap of just on 11 million. You know, which, if you look at what happened to Greatland Gold, for instance, you know, Greatland Gold drilled, they established the asset, and then of course there was an earn-in with Newcrest Mining, and straight away the valuation went from a similar level up to 65, 70 million and higher. So you know, that's the sort of opportunity that we're faced with here. Plus, of course, as we've said on many occasions before, the mining sector, the junior mining sector at the moment is in a purple patch, and that purple patch looks as though it could last for some years to come. We've got analysts saying that gold's going to carry on pushing higher all through 2021 and might take a breather at the end of next year, but it's unlikely given the amount of financial stimulus that's in across the globe at the moment. You know, precious metals in particular, those are going to be the drivers for the junior mining sector in the year to come.
Marvellous, and hang on, let's go back to that. And POW is the ticker there, isn't it? POW, yeah.
POW, yeah.
Paul is a sharp guy, and he knows his onions, what we say. And his metal.
He does, and his metal. Yeah. Indeed.
Cheers, Al. Thanks for that. We'll speak you next weeky.
Thanks, Jess. Speak you next weeky. Cheers, mate.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, BPC. Of course, Bahamas Petroleum, but they've renamed, new logo, BPC. At four, by the way, they are rising 5% to 2.5. At four, Novacyt, that's down 2.8% to 8.55. I think that could hit 10 quid soon. Supply, Atme Capital, up 9% to 0.545. At two, Alba Mineral Resources, up 16% to 0.5 pence. And at one, Eurasia Mining down close to 9% to 33.75 pence. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Cakebox trading update. At four, East Inco Mining final results. At three, Polarian Imaging new system order. That's the biggest cancer center in the US there. At two, Strategic Minerals, Q3 Cobre magnetite sales and cash balance update. And at one, it's Vast Resources, progress on asset-backed debt financing. That's down 5% to 0.165 pence. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.